Welcome to People Power and Politics, hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power and Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.
A very warm welcome to everyone. We are joined by Congresswoman, the Honorable Yvette Clark, who is a representative for the 9th Congressional District in Brooklyn. Ms. Clark has been in Congress since 2007. The 9th Congressional District includes Central and South Brooklyn. Clark is a senior member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee and the chair of the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Protection and Innovation Subcommittee of the House Committee on Homeland Security. Ms. Clark is the only black woman representing New York in Washington. She has a known track record of bringing together moderates and progressives to pass progressive legislation to help communities of color, low-income families, immigrants, and more. Welcome, Ms. Clark. Good to have you here with us today.
Thank you for having me, Pearl. It's great to be with you again.
Our pleasure. So, let's talk about funding for Brooklyn. Our communities have been hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic, and you recently secured $17.7 million for Brooklyn. What will the funding be used for?
Well, first of all, it's just an honor and a privilege to serve the people of the 9th District of New York. And it's always been sort of part of my philosophy that the work that I do in Washington has to have real results on the ground in our constituencies. And, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic really laid bare a lot of the vulnerabilities, a lot of the areas that need to be improved in order to navigate through this pandemic and really make a difference in the lives of the people who are most vulnerable living in this constituency. For many years, particularly starting with the Obama administration, we had not had the means of giving direct appropriation to our constituents. That it had happened prior to President Obama, but during the fiscal crisis that was ended, and many members of Congress unfortunately misused that authority. I'm proud that we were able to reestablish a means and a vehicle by which we're able to give direct appropriations to our communities, because certainly, you know, with the work that I do on the ground in the community, the needs are glaring. This year, we were able, through the FY 2022 budget in the House of Representatives, to make those direct appropriations. And we went through a process reaching out to stakeholders in the community that were providing vital services, particularly, again, in the pandemic era, and to address some of the inequities that, you know, were really put into full focus during the pandemic. So I was able to receive a number of requests from community-based organizations, and we're so proud to be able to meet those needs to the tune of $17.7 million in federal funding for community initiatives. These initiatives span a number of things. One of the things that I'm focused on as a result of the pandemic, and this has always been a focus of mine, which is why I'm on the Energy and Commerce Committee, it's the healthcare infrastructure and the healthcare or lack thereof that our community has access to, and the quality, what needs to be invested in to make sure that we have culturally competent healthcare and that we educate our people about the maintenance of their health and the resources that they have available to them to remain healthy. I was able to fund a number of healthcare institutions within the 9th District to deliver that care. We have to rebuild a much more robust public health infrastructure. It was clear to me, particularly once the pandemic hit New York City, that we were caught flat-footed. and that our communities, communities like the ones I represent in the 9th District, really became ground zero for a lot of illness and death. Aside from that, you know, one of the areas that I believe has deep resonance in this period of time as well are our cultural institutions. Those cultural institutions make a difference in the quality of life, the access to information and programming that our families need, particularly our young people, our young adults that don't oftentimes have access to Manhattan institutions or that aren't even aware that their talents can be utilized in this way. And so I'm so proud to have been able to give millions of dollars to a number of our cultural institutions within the district so that they can meet the needs of our younger population, many of whom are unfortunately, you know, caught between a rock and a hard place, violence in the streets, and lack of opportunity. Having said that, we've also been able to fund organizations that assist our entrepreneurs and job seekers. Because I recognize, again, we were the last ones hired and the first ones fired and hit hardest economically when the economy shut down. Yes, there were many of in our communities who were essential workers and are essential workers and had to go out, you know, in the pandemic to earn a living. But there were many within our community who were unemployed prior to the pandemic and many who went into unemployment as a result of the pandemic. So I'm really, really excited about how this will be applied and what it will do to undergird the people of the 9th District of New York. We have just begun the FY 2023 budget process. And so I want to have your listeners, if they're interested, know of organizations that serve our people on the ground, to please go to my website, that's clark.house.gov, and look under resources. In that category, you'll see our application process. And again, share this information with organizations and groups in the 9th District of New York so that we can assist them in getting direct access to federal resources. Typically, these organizations go to the state, they go to the city, and our federal funding goes to the state and the city. Here we have a vehicle for a direct application to our local community.
So you actually touched on my next question, but I have to ask you, is that enough money for our communities?
That's just a portion. Mm-hmm. You know, let's look at the fact that we passed an American Rescue Plan that gave people access to even more resources, that we just passed a infrastructure bill that will bring more opportunities into our community. These are just a few of the organizations that are doing work on the ground, whether it's curing violence and making sure that we address this epidemic of gun violence in our communities, or it's, you know, the West Indian American Day Carnival Association that has a host of programs outside of carnival that feed people within our community, that make sure that our young people, particularly from the Caribbean, have an option outside of the streets to be able to access programming, be a part of, you know, a quote, a cultural asset in our community. No, that's not enough money. I agree. We're about to go into another funding cycle, and that's why I'm making our people and our constituents aware that we need to access even more of these funds as we build out from what has been purely catastrophic for so many in our community.
Okay, so could you just kindly repeat that website that persons can go and look for the FY 2023 budget?
Sure, they can go to Clark, that's clark.house.gov.
All right. Thank you so much, Congresswoman.
And they, if they hit the tab that says resources, they'll have an opportunity to access the application process.
Okay. Can you just repeat the website again for me?
Sure. It's clark.house, like House of Representatives, .house.gov.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman Yvette.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the Emmett Till anti-lynching law. It was more than 66 years ago that white men viciously lynched 14-year-old Emmett Till for no reason other than being a young black man. On Tuesday, March the 29th, President Biden signed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act. What are your thoughts?
Wow. I mean, it's long overdue. I think that, you know, I am just so proud that I was representing the people of the 9th District of New York at that signing. You know, I started my elective office political career in the New York City Council. And what many people may not be aware of is that our beloved and deceased district attorney, Ken Thompson, was responsible for reopening the case of Emmett Till and getting a successful prosecution of the men who lynched him. That's going back to 2002, 2003. That wasn't that long ago. But for hundreds of years, people have been advocating for and submitting legislation to make lynching a federal crime. People are most aware of Emmett Till because that happened towards the end of the 20th century. But, you know, for hundreds of years, going back to women like Ida B. Wells and many others, there were organizations constantly appealing to Congress because so many lives and so much terror have been unleashed on black people simply for being black. You know, in parts of this country, there had been no actions taken. Yeah, there was legislation introduced, but it was never passed by the House and the Senate and made law. Here it is, fast forward, we're in the year 2022, and under the leadership of Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, having Joe Biden in the White House and Kamala Harris in the White House, we were finally able to make this law the law of the land. And I can't tell you how proud I am of this moment so that another generation has some recourse should they be attacked, you know, for simply being black, that these crimes can be prosecuted with the understanding that, you know, the degradation of our humanity, using that as a means to terrorize black communities, will not be tolerated.
Thank you so much. So let's talk about black women right now. March is celebrated as Women's History Month. On March the 28th, the Congressional Caucus on Black Women and Girls, of which you are part of, released the report, An Economy for All, Building a Black Women Best Legislative Agenda. Additionally, the Black Women Best Report argues that black women are among the last to recover from economic downturns and last to benefit during times of economic growth. Can you talk about the significance of this report and its recommendations or specific policy solutions to close the gaps facing black women?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, first of all, Pearl, for highlighting the work of the Caucus on Black Women and Girls. This is a caucus that was founded by myself, Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman of New Jersey, and Congresswoman Robin Kelly of Illinois. And one of the charges of this caucus in the House of Representatives is to highlight both the tragedy and the triumph of black women. And we thought it was important to put out this report because, again, you know, I think the COVID-19 pandemic provides a unique lens into how, you know, black women in particular, black girls in specific, are impacted in a society where their humanity has not been valued, where they contribute far more to our civil society than our civil society in them. And so this report really brings into focus the role of Black women in the economy and the lack of equity that exists in acknowledging the fact that Black women have been in the workforce and are over-indexed in the economy, yet remain the target of exploitation, of undervalue. And, you know, we think that when the economy is working for Black women, then it will inherently work for everyone else. We know that the inclusivity that is fundamental to this framework, which is the Black Women Best framework, does not stop with Black women. That, you know, because it will uproot oppressive systems like white supremacy, the capitalist exploitation, the ableism, the sexism, that we will be able to demand more for all people.
Okay, so can we talk about the specific policy solutions that the report recommends?
Absolutely. Well, the report wants to establish clear policy agenda that will address the inequities that disproportionately burden Black women and Black girls. And these policy solutions in the report not only create investment, but they also talk about the economic progress that needs to happen. We focus on solutions like guaranteed income, which will achieve economic prosperity. If you recall, you know, during the pandemic, we saw that providing stimulus to Black families and Black women in particular made a huge difference. You add to that the child tax credit lifted 50% of all children in poverty out of poverty. So we know that a guaranteed income will make a huge difference in the lives of those women and those children of our community. It's a framework that has been established that will demonstrate how centering Black women in all public policy can help us to close the gaps that perpetuate the inequality that has been a part of our existence in the United States. You start with the fact that for hundreds of years, Black women were basically a source of free labor. And then you go to the fact that Black women have never been paid in the same proportion as white male counterparts in modern day. And so that disparity has to be changed, but there are policies currently that perpetuate that. And what the report does is it offers a scorecard for all legislators and all policymakers that can be used to evaluate policies and criteria that we can use in the future to effectively apply the framework that we're talking about. This is the third year of the pandemic, and much progress has been made to counter economic hardship that has hit us. But there's a long road of recovery that remains. And I know that Black women who are overrepresented in occupations at high risk have been particularly impacted. Our essential workers, so many, of course, were Black women. So this report really drills down into all of the various ways in which economically we can change the dynamics through policies, unleashing policies that have equity, you know, built into it.
So we thank you so much, Congresswoman Yvette Clark, and we commend you and the Congressional Caucus for tackling this important issue. A copy of the report can be downloaded at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. So in your introduction, I mentioned that you passed progressive legislation to help communities of color, low-income families, and immigrants. Can you share some examples with us?
Absolutely. Well, you know, the House of Representatives, one of the areas that I'm extremely extremely proud of, while we're not quite there yet, is the work that I've been doing in comprehensive immigration reform. Your audience may be aware that I've been tasked with the drafting of the Biden administration's immigration policy alongside six other colleagues in Washington, D.C., by our Speaker Nancy Pelosi, mm-hmm. the American Dream Act. That bill has not been introduced yet, but prior to that, the House of Representatives did pass the Dream and Promise Act, for which I was an original sponsor. We're having difficulty with the United States Senate, and they have not recognized the necessity of making comprehensive immigration reform a priority at this moment. But we have to continue to push. We have to continue to advocate because we cannot continue to exist with a broken immigration system as we see the pressures of migration that are constantly a part of our experience in the United States. When we look at the southern border, what's happening with Haiti, and now as we grapple with the war between Russia and Ukraine, we must make sure that there is equity, there's justice with respect to our immigration system. I was a proud advocate for the repeal of Title 42, which the Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretary Mayorkas, has just lifted, and that will be going into effect in May. So the immigration front is one of those areas. As I've talked about healthcare policy, I've done a lot of work in making sure that our institutions, particularly our safety net hospitals, those in our community, whether it's Kings County, SUNY Downstate, Brookdale, Kingsbrook Jewish, that they're receiving the resources they need to recover from all of the spending they had to do for the uninsured or underinsured of our community that need their access to health care. And that's an area that, again, is a huge, huge priority for me. So we've passed that legislation, and I'm really, really proud of that. And then let me talk about some of the areas that I'm really, really excited about and have really carved a path for our community. And that's in the area of technology. We recognize during this pandemic that, again, the inequities were glaring. And in many instances in our communities, some folks had access to broadband or access to the internet, whether it's Wi-Fi services or broadband, and many others didn't. So that when our children had to go remote and do their schoolwork online, it was a hardship for many of our families. And I was an advocate who helped to craft that legislation to provide access to broadband in the American Rescue Plan. I've also passed legislation to deal with what ultimately we're going to have to do is to become energy independent through the development of renewable energy. And that's an area I've been very, very focused on is, again, our communities get hit hardest when there's a rise in energy costs. And in addition to that, you know, when we are hit with a storm like Superstorm Sandy, and it becomes almost impossible to recover. So our jump to the access to renewable energy and to electric cars is going to be critical. I don't want to see our communities left out of that. And my voice has been very instrumental in making sure that legislation incorporates the development of charging stations within Black and brown communities, in Caribbean communities, in communities that typically are last to be integrated into new infrastructure. And my legislation was passed. It's the EV charging stations or electric vehicle charging stations for underserved communities. And that comes with billions of dollars to make sure that our communities are built out so that we can access opportunity through managing charging stations, creating new businesses, maintaining those charging stations, and that we're not the last to be integrated into what is inevitable in our nation, and that's the shift to renewable energies and energy independence.
Thank you so much for that. It seems like just yesterday we were discussing your re-election. June the 20th is the primary elections. What is your message to your constituents of the 9th Congressional District?
Yes, thank you for asking me that question, Pearl. My message is that my work is not done. I am fully vested in navigating our people out of this pandemic and into prosperity, and making sure that communities like ours are healthy, are given access and options to use their talent, their God-given talent, within this city, within this community, in our communities, that they're able to reside in affordable housing and are able to raise their children in safe communities. And until I feel as though our community is receiving, its fair share, what they've invested in their work, in their taxes, in their communities, I'm ready to go back to Washington to keep up the fight. And so I want to say to my constituents, you're absolutely right, Pearl. I just ran for re-election the year before last, but in the House of Representatives, we run every other year. And I don't stop running. I make sure that I do the legislative elective work, but I also make sure that my constituents feel me, see me, and have access to me on the ground. It's a labor of love, very passionate about the people that I represent here in Brooklyn, very proud to carry the banner in Washington, D.C., the Caribbean banner, the Black Woman's banner, the Girl from Brooklyn's banner, all of those things. My lived experience helps me to really focus on the work that needs to be done to deliver for the people of the 9th District of New York. And it's been the highest honor of my life to carry that banner.
Okay. So how can one get more information about your campaign and also to support it?
Yes, they can go to the Clark for Congress website where they can sign up and reach out, and we look forward to integrating all of your support into what we know will be a victorious campaign. The feedback that I've been getting on the ground from the people of my community, I've lived here all my life, has been quite encouraging. And I know that there are many who want to be a part of this movement. Please feel free. Reach out to Clark for Congress, and we will be glad to receive you.
Okay. And I just want to tell you, I get your newsletters and I absolutely love the new photo.
Thank you, Pearl. Thank you so much.
All right. So, Congresswoman Clark, thank you so much for being here with us and sharing all this great information. And we look forward to having you back again.
Thank you for having me, Pearl. Have a blessed day. Stay safe and stay healthy.
You're welcome.
People Power in Politics. Hard talk, riveting interviews, community updates, in-depth analysis. That's People Power in Politics. We tell it to you as it is. No holds barred. You are the people. You have the power. We bring you the politics. To listen to our show, be a guest, or to advertise, visit www.pppradio.nyc. That's www.pppradio.nyc.